News Weekly is an ad-free listener-supported podcast made possible by listeners like you. Just go to patreon.com/SammyShah, that's S-A-M-I-S-H-A-H, to support the podcast. Top stories of the week. The juice runs out. Also, Biden mumbles something. And Peter Dutton wins at metaphors. All that and more on News Weekly. Hello and welcome to News Weekly, where we punch the news in the headlines weekly. If the coffin is airy, you must bury news now. If, like me, you're a Gen Xer, then you know that we lived through the real high times of popular culture, the 1990s. In the cinemas, we had Clueless and Reality Bites, The Breakfast Club and Boys in the Hood. The Ninja Turtles were reigning supreme in animation, chased closely by the Thundercats and He-Man. We were dancing in the dark while listening to White Lines and Wicked Game and Mr. Jones and being rocked by Amadeus. We put our valuables in Trapper Keepers, dialed up the internet with our 14.4 kbps modems so we could Yahoo our favorite GeoCities web pages. It was a time for big shoulder pads, grunge, and 24-hour music television, and damn it, we had fun. Which is why now it's all coming back. Gen Xers have a brief moment of control over the reins of the world before we're pushed off by our younger, stupider, poorly read, and badly dressed siblings, the millennials. But until that generation of boy band addicts stops tweeting about J.K. Rowling, we can still indulge our nostalgia to the fullest. Which is why we've got new He-Man cartoons on Netflix, come back to us by Creed, Hootie and the Blowfish, and Pantera. X-Men 97 just dropped the single best episode of television this week. There's a new Bad Boys movie, and we're talking about O.J. Simpson again.
All right, we're following some important breaking news right now. O.J. Simpson has died at the age of 76.
Okay, so maybe the juice doesn't get a comeback tour. Yes, the man whose credits include winning the Heisman Trophy, appearing in the Naked Gun films, oh, and murdering his wife and her friend, then getting acquitted for that murder, then writing a book titled If I Did It, Confessions, before eventually doing time for attempting to steal sports memorabilia, has died of cancer. Even our high-profile criminals were more interesting than the current crop. Who do Gen Z have? Bruce Lehman? Fuck off! We watched a slow-moving Bronco being chased by police for hours on TV. These kids today, they would have gotten bored after 5 seconds and moved over to TikTok. I mean, there's no attention span anymore. Well, with cancer doing what the US justice system failed to do, all that's left now is to remember that justice may be blind, but sometimes it also lets off a murderer in a weird bid to avenge an unconnected act of racism, at least according to this juror from the trial.
You think that they're members of the jury that voted to acquit OJ because of Rodney King?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
How many of you think felt that way?
Oh, probably 90% of us.
90%? Did you feel that way?
Yes.
That was payback.
Considering Assange news now, there are certain things you can stereotype about white Australians. They love waltzing Matilda, shushing loud ethnic people, Eurovision, winning awards at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, being surprisingly good at handling spicy food, and being obsessed with Julian Assange. Julian is basically the white Nelson Mandela. In fact, some Australians love him so much, I think they think Nelson Mandela was the black Julian Assange. He's actually the only thing Australians on the left and right agree on. From the Greens Party to Barnaby Joyce, they all want to save Julian Assange and will do whatever it takes to get the palest hero since Elric of Melnibony out of jail. That is, every Australian except for George Brandeis, the former British High Commissioner to the United Kingdom and a man most likely to have a private collection of erotic lithographs. Here he is on Q&A, an ABC TV show Australians are forced to watch as a sort of blackmail to keep the ABC funded.
Well, it's not up to us to end Julian Assange's imprisonment because he is being the subject of a prosecution by the United States for breach of American law, and the proceedings in London at the moment are extradition proceedings between the United States and Julian Assange. Australia is not a party to those proceedings. Australia wouldn't have the legal standing to be a party to those proceedings. Nor should we be interfering with judicial proceedings. To do that would be to interfere with the course of justice.
But it was a decision of the Home Secretary in the UK to approve the extradition. Did you, as High Commissioner, make any representation?
I did not. It's the Australian government. It certainly was the Australian government's view that the legal proceedings and the extradition proceedings should run their course.
Which is fine. Australia doesn't want to interfere in American judicial proceedings since that's an allied country, and even though Julian Assange is an Australian citizen, that's not Australia's problem. It's not like Assange got arrested in Bali with 4 kilograms of marijuana, for which the Indonesian government sentenced him to 20 years in jail, and then he got out 9 years later because the Australian government arranged a prisoner swap deal, basically. Because if that was the case, Julian would be on the next season of Dancing with the Stars. Instead, he's still in prison in the UK, waiting to be extradited to the US. And so far, the best Australia has been able to do in getting him released is a reporter yelling a question from across the lawn to Joe Biden as he's walking past.
Do you have a response to Australia's request that you end Julian Assange's prosecution?
We're considering.
That mumble was Joe Biden saying, "We're considering it." And for Assange supporters, that's a huge deal.
Julian Assange's family and supporters have welcomed the comments.
It's encouraging to hear the president saying that they are considering dropping the case, and we say they should do so. And the time is now.
Biden has opened the door a little bit here. I see it as a sort of a foot in the door now for the Australian government and those people advocating for Julian around the world.
Look, that's a lot of hope to pin on a nothing statement delivered offhand by the oldest serving president in American history. I'm pretty sure Biden didn't even remember who Julian Assange was at the time. This was him at a press conference the very next day.
Elect me. I'm in the 20th century, 21st century, not back then.
I'm pretty sure we're considering it is just his standard answer to any question. For now, though, it seems like Assange's best chance at freedom lies with the American government eventually remembering to take Australian concerns seriously, especially when they're worded so strongly, like Prime Minister Anthony Albanese's latest statement.
Enough is enough. There's nothing to be gained by Mr. Assange's continued incarceration.
It might just be too soon for Assange to start working on his dance choreography. In case you've checked out, the Israel war on Gaza is going exactly how you'd think it would be by now. The latest ceasefire deal is stalled because Hamas doesn't have enough hostages left alive to swap, living hostages being kind of an essential part of any hostage swap deal. Meanwhile, Israel killed Hamas's political leader Ismail Haniyeh's 3 sons and 4 grandsons in Gaza, so that's also definitely going to help the deal along. Oh, and Israel is waiting to see if Iran will retaliate after Israel bombed the Iranian embassy in Damascus last week, and America is watching it all with growing frustration at how little its finger-wagging has accomplished in reining in any of the involved parties. Oh, and Gazans are still starving and dying, and Israel is still planning an assault on Rafah, and protests are increasing in Israel against Netanyahu and calling for a new election so that Israelis can have another opportunity to vote Netanyahu back in, despite everyone thinking this time they've learned their lesson, as if George W. Bush didn't win a second term in office after 9/11 and the Israelis haven't made a single responsible or mature election decision since Yitzhak Rabin. Don't worry though, Australia's coming to the rescue.
Well, the federal government is contemplating recognising Palestinian statehood, with Australia's foreign minister saying a two-state solution is the only hope for peace between Israelis and Palestinians.
Now, there are those who always claim recognition is rewarding an enemy. This is wrong. First, because Israel's own security depends on a two-state solution. There is no long-term security for Israel unless it is recognised by the countries of its region. But the normalisation agenda that was being pursued before October 7 cannot proceed without progress on Palestinian statehood.
This is a huge step for any Israelis and Palestinians who care about what Australia thinks, which must be one or two of them. Maybe some drone manufacturers in Israel, probably, and the odd aid worker in Gaza who hasn't yet been killed by those drones. It has, however, resulted in a massive response from Leader of the Opposition, Peter Dutton, continuing the coalition policy of reacting to any government announcement with, "But what if no" instead?
It is the most reckless act of a foreign minister I've seen in my 22 years in the parliament.
Are you sure? Because Peter Dutton was in Parliament in 2001 when the Immigration Minister Philip Ruddock lied about refugees threatening to throw children overboard. Or the many times Alexander Downer has said that the Iraq War was the right thing to do.
For a crass domestic political win, Penny Wong has damaged our relations with our ally Israel.
Taking another swipe at Senator Wong and the Albanese government, Mr. Dutton accused Labor's lack of leadership for its role in the rise in anti-Semitism within Australia.
The Prime Minister and members of his government have downplayed the unprecedented level of anti-Semitism afflicting our country by dishonestly treating it as analogous with other forms of prejudice. And what remains is a national moral fog which has made anti-Semitism possible. Foreign Minister Penny Wong made that moral fog denser last night.
So if I understand that foggy metaphor there, recognising Palestinian statehood in the mildest possible terms is anti-Semitism, which must be shocking to John Howard, given he was endorsing the two-state solution as far back as 2006.
There has to be a two-state solution. There has to be an independent, secure Israel recognised by everybody, and there has to be a Palestinian homeland.
John Howard there being shockingly anti-Semitic, according to Peter Dutton. Dutton then went on to show that he's really not good at analogies in the worst possible way.
Whilst no one was killed during the protests on October 9, thank God, the events at the Sydney Opera House were akin to a Port Arthur moment in terms of their social and national significance. In my judgment, Prime Minister Albanese has not risen to that moment as John Howard did.
Maybe because those two events aren't comparable? What does he think Albanese should do? Make everyone who owns a pro-Palestinian protester turn it in to the government? Or maybe the real anti-Semitism is seeing a perfectly reasonable attempt at planning towards a future which might be more peaceful and using that to score political points by comparing it to horrific events that it doesn't compare to in any way while making this about racism against Jewish people when it's got nothing to do with that either. I mean, that, to me, sounds pretty anti-Semitic. Or just politics as usual. That's it for this week's edition of News Weekly. If you like the podcast, please head over to iTunes, leave a 5-star rating and review. Or join my Patreon. That's patreon.com/Sammy Shah. That's S-A-M-I-S-H-A-H. Otherwise, I'll see you right back here next week on News Weekly, where we punch the news in the headlines weekly.